Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
Welcome in to the Final Inspection Show here on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Polish Pipe, I'm Jeff Orlowski here. I'm obviously, we are brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway out in Union Grove. What a picture-perfect day it is right now. Get out to Great Lakes Dragway. Enjoy some fun in the sun, some great food, some great racing. Get out there. You will have a blast. Fun and affordable for the entire family. Also brought to you by David Hobbs Honda on in Greendale. And Glendale. And get out there. Fantastic deals going on all weekend long, both new and used cars. David Hobbs Honda. You will love it. Now, I'm here in studio. I look to my right. I'm all alone. I look to my left. I'm all alone. You know, did you guys as kids ever play that game, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Well, we're going to switch it up a little bit. Where in the world is Steve Zocchi? Well, let's go out to the Great Midwest Bank hotline and see if we can get a hint. Mr. Z-Man, where are you today, brother?
Well, currently right now, I've been kind of everywhere, man, at Road America. Currently right now, for cell coverage and just making sure that we have a good phone line, I'm inside a turn three. Looking inside as the S2000, Formula 2000, I guess you could call them the single A part of the ladder. The Road to Indy series is on track right now. And final practice before qualifying is just concluded. And it was Joseph Newgarden with Team Penske, the quickest. And Colton Herta, who looks like he was out to lunch yesterday almost, is rocketed back to be second quick. So a nice rebound for the Steinbrenner group.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get more from Road America, quick rundown of the show today. David Hobbs, he's going to join us, talk a lot of F1 and everything with Hobbs. I know he's out at Road America signing books and all that kind of stuff as well. Dave Coleman from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is going to be on the show today. We've got Drake Kemper. He's going to be on the show. Eddie Lapine, Rich Zimmerman. It is a locked and loaded, packed show today. Racing out at Road America all weekend long. You know, you're in one of the most beautiful places on earth, Steve. Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty and practices and who's quick and who slid off the course a little bit during practice earlier today, what is your favorite place to watch the race at Road America? I know you said you're at turn three now. Is it turn 11? You know, where's your favorite spot to kind of camp out and watch a bunch of racing?
Well, I mean, there's just so many of them. It's not really fair because it depends. There's several factors that are involved, including, what time of the day it is. Like when we came in, we came, right from the house, a bunch of us, and we they said, well, what are we doing for breakfast? I said, well, let's go to the Gearbox. And any of the people that know where the Gearbox is, it's on the top of the hill outside of Turn 14. And, it's not just like an Egg McMuffin. I mean, this is like, if you want an omelet, they'll make you an omelet. So, like, today I had a Mexican omelet and hash browns. I mean, there's not too many racetracks in North America where for breakfast you can get an actual omelet and hash browns.
All right. Well, that's called...
And then they have a patio there, so you're looking at the cars. There's a series here called the Radical Group. These are Radical built. It's a company that makes these sports cars. It's a spec cars series, and they got about 30 of them here. They run all day. They put on a good show, and they were the cars that were starting. 8 o'clock practice starts here at Road America every morning on race weekend, and those are the cars that were on the track when we pulled in this morning.
Yeah, not a bad way to spend a morning while you're scarfing down your Mexican omelet there.
Best of all, I didn't spill any on my shirt.
Wow. Were you wearing a bib?
No. And I'm a media person today, so I'm actually dressed in business casual. So,
Yeah, it's even more surprising that you didn't get any on your shirt. I know every time I dress up, I wear half of what I'm eating and drinking. But when I'm sitting there walking around in my normal clothes, nothing ever touches them. So go figure. Yeah. Well, I know Will Power had a little bit of problems in practice today. Are you surprised?
No. And Graham Rahal did too. I mean, they were talking to Graham Rahal on IndyCar Radio, and he's like, well, we wanted to see where we were at. He was pushing it coming out of turn seven, spun the car, and he got away with one. I mean, that's a fast area of the track. When you go off course, all four wheels, and you're on the grass, you can go for a ride, and he kind of got away with one. I guess he broke an A-arm and bent the rear wing a little bit. But, I mean, that's one of those situations, either or, depending exactly where on the track and everything and how fast and how if you hit a little deviation in the grass, you can go for a hell of a ride and ride off a car. But, he got away with it, was able to drive it back to the pit, and, they'll be fine for qualifying. But, there's times where, practice is practice. Of course, you're going to work on your race setups and this and that, but you also got to see, okay, what can this car do? And there's going to be a couple times during practice where you're going to try and get your hot lap in if there's not cars around you, and you can open it up, and that's what he was doing, and it bit him.
Yeah, well, now's the time to test it out, see where you can and cannot pass, where your car handles the best, and all that, and unless, you sit there and totally wreck your car, like you said, for the most part, you can get away with it. So I like that way of thinking there.
Yeah, I mean, he ended up 16th. And his teammate, Takuma Sato, who was actually showing some speed yesterday, he was 18. So, struggles for the Rahal Lanigan team. But with Newgarden, no surprise there. He's been fast, and he's really starting to hit his stride now for Team Penske. Colton Herta, it's good to see him seeing some speed. But you think, with his history in that, this would be a track that would kind of benefit, his style and everything. Ryan Hunter-Reay, Alexander Rossi, Spencer Pigot, maybe a bit of a surprise, showing some speed. Will Power, Santino Ferrucci has been quick all week, hanging around in the top 10. So, some surprises in that, but some of the usual suspects, especially with Team Penske running as strong as they have been the last few races, and Newgarden especially, seems like the man to beat.
Spencer Pigot's been pretty fast all season long. I think, by now we're starting to get past the the stage of having raised eyebrows when you see him pretty quick on the practice charts, don't you?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and, you know, Ed Carpenter was racing the whole series and, you know, was not a road racer. He's one of the last guys that come from the USAC sprint car midget ranks and all that. And so never, you know, always kind of struggled on the road courses. Actually improved his road course game, you know, which is tough to do. I mean, especially at the pointy end of the stick in the IndyCar series, you know, these are guys that have been racing road courses pretty much since, you know, some guys since they were 8, 10 years old. So you go, someone like Ed Carpenter doesn't really start racing road courses until he's, you know, 19, 20 years old. There's a lot of catching up to do. And actually was starting to show some speed, but was in the, you know, pretty much always in the second half of the grid. So he decided, you know what, I'm going to step away. I got to become more of a team owner. I'm going to still drive the ovals, which is my strength. And he always shows speed especially at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And they brought in Spencer Pigot, a young American, and who had showed speed throughout his career. And, you know, he was the road course guy, and they brought him in, and now he's the full-time. He's the full-time guy at Ed Carpenter Racing, and it's, you know, you've seen that starting to pay dividends. You know, he had some mighty shoes to fill because that's where Joseph Newgarden came. And Joseph Newgarden was winning races for Ed Carpenter Racing, talented kid. But, you know, when Team Penske calls you and writes that big check, I mean, to be, you know, you can always say, well, you know, Ed Carpenter Racing brought you in. But even Ed knew that, you know, when Roger Penske gives you a call and gives you an opportunity like that, you really, as a race car driver, you have to take it. So, and now Spencer Pigot is starting to show dividends for Ed Carpenter Racing.
Yeah, one quick detour away here from Road America. Looking at the racing schedule this weekend, obviously IndyCar out at, running the road course at Road America, and NASCAR is running the road course out in Sonoma. Do you think that it's kind of a disservice to sit there and have both series running the same type of track on the same weekend? Do you think that, you know, it would benefit NASCAR to run an oval for those people who like oval racing more than road course racing on the same weekend that Indy's running and running a road course?
That's an interesting point, because I used to think that. I thought of that too, and to be honest, you're really the only one that I can remember kind of bringing that up. So it's kind of, I don't know if it's scary that we think that way or what, but I've actually thought of that. But I, in a way, I'm like, I'm not really sure if because, you know, to be honest, I always talk to, Sparky used to hate road course racing, but then he would go, geez, you know, those are some of the best races on the circuit now. And to be honest, you know, they have been. So I think some of the NASCAR fans really don't mind. They kind of, I think they're looking forward when they go to Sonoma and Watkins Glen, because there's some pretty wild racing that's occurring.
Yeah, there has been. Those races are getting better. You know, it's just a whole lot of pit strategy when you got guys pitting five laps in, you know, which is, I appreciate it, because you got a lot of guys doing stuff different than just, you know, the leaders. And then you got Brad Keselowski, who's, you know, pit strategy every week is completely off the wall compared to everybody else, which has obviously worked, paid off big for him over the course of his career so far. But, that was just something that popped in my head, because there's some people that aren't big fans of road course racing still.
NASCAR does have an issue with all their full course cautions. You know, in most road racing series, if there's an accident or an incident, you know, especially like a track like Road America, if during a race, if somebody goes off, they'll do what they call as a local yellow. So they'll kind of shut down that area of the track, but you can race at the other areas, and they'll get that car off the course or need what they do to bring the track so they can go green all the way around. NASCAR doesn't do that. They like to run it like an oval, So you'll have incidents, especially late in the race when everybody's fighting, banging into each other. There's a lot of incidents. And I remember there was a race, I think it took them an hour to run 10 laps, and that's not good entertainment.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Steve, we got to take a quick break. Can you hold on one more segment?
You betcha.
All right, phenomenal. We got more of the Final Inspection Show, more of Steve Zocchi live from beautiful Road America coming up next. You're listening to the Final Inspection Show here on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show here on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Jeff Orlowski, the Polish Pipe Bomb, in studio today. We got Steve Zocchi. He's out at Road America. You are right where you're supposed to be, in front of the radio or listening on the radio.com app. Your mother would be proud that you guys are listening to the Final Inspection Show today. And if she's not, tell her to call me, and I'll tell her that she should be proud of you guys. So back on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, Mr. Steve Zocchi, welcome back to your own show, Steve.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Right now, currently, we have a USF 2000 practice going on right now. And actually, let me correct myself. This is what is this? No, this is race number one. I'm sorry. Race number one for the U.S. Formula 2000. And these guys are putting on a show here. I'm inside of turn three, and there's no rubbing. There's supposed to be no rubbing in open wheel racing, but there was just a moment ago. Two guys running about sixth or seventh came into turn three side by side. And yeah, they were kicking up dust and rubbing wheel to wheel and fighting for the spot. And I didn't think they were going to make it out of the corner, but they actually did.
Well, good. You know me. I like it when they're beating and banging for positions.
That was interesting. I'm like, oh boy, this is going to get interesting. Oh, they made it.
All right. Well, the fact that you didn't know what series was on the track, how many Coronas did you have with your Mexican omelet this morning?
You have Indy Lights, and you have the Radical Cup, you have the MX5 Cup, and then it just doesn't flow off your, you know, it's the USF and then Space 2000. They could call it Formula 2. Formula 2 would be a lot easier. Of course, that's probably a copyrighted name in Europe, but, or just F 2000. I don't know. I've always struggled with this series and the name.
Yeah, I hear you. I do too, especially, you know, I get confused easily. So bright lights, shiny things, hard names to pronounce, it all gets me. So I'm with you.
Like the laser, with the laser dot on the ground, you're done.
Yeah, yeah, I'm like a cat like that, you know, just freak out and chase my own tail around. So go ahead.
Yeah, I got to explain who's on the show today.
Okay.
So we're all, what we do with this show, we've done it for the last few years, is usually I record some of the show after Bill Michaels' show, which airs, of course, on this station on Fridays from 10 to 2. And it works out because all of our equipment is there. And to be honest, it's easier getting drivers on Friday than it is Saturday. Well, this year, the issue that we ran into is just about when Bill's show started, they had practice. And then just about when Bill's show ended and I was going to start my show, they started the second practice. And so the problem is there wasn't really enough space between the two, because after practice, nowadays, the drivers and the engineers sit down for about a half an hour or so, debrief. And, you know, and then there's all the sponsor things scheduled. And it was really hard getting drivers this year. So because usually they'll space enough time between practices where it's just it's really kind of cool, because we just sit in one of the suites taping the show, enjoyable, and they just start bringing in drivers. It's fantastic. This year, though, with the scheduling, it was pretty tough to do. George was able to talk to George Steinbrenner IV, of course, the team owner, grandson of George Steinbrenner, and driver Colton Herta in the 88 car. He's always an interesting interview. I reached out to my buddy. We've had him on the show, and he was actually on the big show a couple years ago, Drake Kemper from the Mazda MX-5 Cup. Mazda MX-5 Cup, of course, MX-5s are the Miatas, but these are beefed-up Miatas. There's probably about 35 of them. Put on a fantastic show. But Drake is he finished third in his race yesterday. He's one of the top names in that driver in that series, trying to move his way up, and was a former Disney child actor. And not only because of that, but he's just an interesting interview. He's a fan of racing and always has interesting thoughts on the world of motorsports. So that's why I have him on the show. He's an interesting interview. So he's on the show. And then we also had on David Hobbs. And actually, we didn't talk F1, Jeff. We just talked pretty much his remembrances of Road America, which he first drove here in 1964. So, and then he didn't drive it again for another 5 years. But there's some pretty interesting stories. I think the listeners will enjoy it. And back to a different time. And then we also talk a little bit about the safety of the sport and whatnot, and the differences with this, you know, how the safety in that has improved, which is interesting because this weekend the race is sponsored by the Rev Group. It's the Rev Group Grand Prix at Road America. It's a tribute to the first responders, which I think is pretty cool, because back in my previous life, I was a first responder. So, and it's a neat group. They're it's presented by the American Medical Response Group, and they do a lot with fire equipment and whatnot, fire EMS and police. And I was proud to be part of the EMS side of it, and first got my start in on the professional side of racing in track safety. So, and track safety has always kind of been an interest of mine, and to see. We were sitting down with Hobo and chatting. It was a pretty interesting conversation, so I enjoyed that. And then we also chatted with Eddie Lafine, of course, we've had on the show, our road racing guy. He's up here this weekend with us. And Rich Zimmerman, who's our photographer. Rich is the son of Carl Zimmerman. Some of you older listeners may remember Carl Zimmerman from Channel 6. Well, Rich is, if you ever see the movie... what's that one movie where the kid is a writer for Rolling Stone?
Almost Famous, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, I love that movie. And Rich was kind of like that. Rich started to shoot concerts when he was 15. And he's got probably one of the most awesome portfolios of music photos dating back to the late 60s, just in the heyday of rock and roll. But not only that, has an interest in auto racing, and shot for us at the Milwaukee Mile back a few years ago, and he shoots out here. But I wanted to talk to those guys, and we talked about track photography, shooting photos, and how that has changed, evolved over the years. Eddie started to shoot Formula One in the early 80s, and I shot at the Milwaukee Mile for many years, and it's interesting how the dynamics and the safety part of it has changed. And even though the equipment is so much better in some ways, though, it's harder to get certain shots because of the safety, the fencing, regulations, insurance, and whatnot. So interesting conversation we had with that.
Yeah, I bet. And Rich Zimmerman, he's a fantastic follow on social media, because he'll always shoot out these tweets or Facebook posts about, you know, oh, check out this documentary on this band on this channel. Yeah. They use my pictures in it and all this kind of stuff. You know, he's seen everybody, been there, done that, and just great stories. He's got a fantastic blog as well. So good stuff. I can't wait to hear that.
So make sure you get out to Road America for the NTT IndyCar Series Rev Group Grand Prix. Early start tomorrow, Rich, or Jeff. 11:43 a.m. green flag for the Rev Group Grand Prix tomorrow. So,
well, that's I like the early start.
Early tonight.
Yeah, I like the early start. You know, and then you got to just sit there and figure out what excuse, if you don't bring the ball and chain with you out to the track, what excuse you're going to use to make sure that you don't get home while there's still daylight for yard work. You know what I mean?
Lots to do out here yet as IndyCar qualifying starts. IndyCar qualifying starts at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Yeah, that's going to be good stuff. So we're running out of time here, Steve. Who's your pick for tomorrow out at Road America?
Joseph Newgarden is fast. It's always an upset. I kind of like Colton Herta. I really do.
Okay. And I'm going to go with Sato.
Takuma Sato, very good. I like that pick.
And then NASCAR at Sonoma. Who are you thinking there?
Ricky Rudd.
Ricky.
Good on the Roca.
Yeah, Ricky Rudd. Yeah, great pick. Great
or
pick.
Or Rusty. Rusty is really good on. You know, it's interesting with NASCAR back in the day. You know, Boris said, and Ron Fellows, you know, taught these guys how to drive road racing and road courses and whatnot. And they actually taught themselves out of a ride, because back in the day you'd have to have road course ringers. Well, these kids coming up are so good on the road courses now. There's really no need for road course ringers, and it's not, you know, if you played fantasy NASCAR, you could always kind of tweak your lineup for certain guys, like, you know, maybe Juan Montoya or AJ Allmendinger, or some of those guys back in the day, but. You know, these guys are so good now, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, it's almost, when you look at the lineup, you kind of go by basically just who's running fast. The road course component is really kind of diminished. I don't know what your opinion on that is.
Well, yeah, and when you look back at the numbers, the road course ringers never really finished all that well. So, you know, they would run up front for a while, they would get into some kind of trouble, have a mechanical problem, something like that, but their average finishes were not that well, and yes, the newer guys are driving better on the road courses. They taught themselves how to turn right and left. So, who you got going to Victory Lane out in Wine Country tomorrow?
Kyle Busch,
always a safe pick.
Kurt Busch.
Okay, picking one of the Bush brothers.
Yeah.
Okay, that works. I will take. Give me Truex. You know, we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. I don't know. All right, Steve. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate your time. Enjoy Road America. All you people out there, if you're wandering around the vast estate that is Road America, keep your eye out for Steve Zocchi. Kick him in the knee if you see him for me, please. And then buy him a taco afterwards. He will appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for having me on my own show. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. You can send that check anytime. Enjoy it, Steve. Have fun at the race tomorrow, buddy.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. That was Steve Zocchi. Join me on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019? Look no further. Call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935. When we return, we will bring you Steve's conversation with Mr. David Hobbs. That's coming up next here on the Final Inspection Show. Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove, along with David Hobbs Honda, 6100 North Green Bay Avenue, for the best in not only new cars, but a wide selection of Honda-certified used cars and a wide variety of used cars, too. And joining me in suite number 5 at picturesque road America it is, David Hobbs. Thanks for joining the show, sir.
Thanks for having me on again, Steve.
We've been selling a lot of books this weekend.
We have. Hobbo, which I brought out March of 2018, is going very well. And obviously an IndyCar crowd here today, Friday. Yeah, we've had a very nice run today, and hopefully over the weekend, too.
You and I were chatting about it, and you think, you know, people have bought their, you know, have bought the books, and we're probably going to be seeing the same people. But we did a nice little thing last night at Siepkins for Racing Kids for Cancer, and with good crowd, and people were coming in. We're happy to see us. We even had some, a couple of gentlemen from Texas and people from Pittsburgh, and I mean, it was a really nice crowd, and yeah, they love the book, and it's kind of a cool book.
Oh, well, thank you. I must say that two or three people have popped onto the shop. I'm selling it out of the gift shop here at the track, and a couple of people have come and said, hey, I've already got it. Lovely, great read, and I keep saying, well, say that louder to this gentleman right here who's thinking about buying one. So people that have read it seem to like it a lot. Because it covers a lot of ground. It covers from my first race in 1959 right to the end of my TV career last year. So, I mean, that's a lot of ground to cover. That's 60 years of racing and TV.
A lot of people think your first race here, and I did for a while, was the first race here was a Formula 5000 race with Surtees in 1969. But actually, you raced here earlier in, what, 64?
I came here in 1964 with a Lotus Cortina from the Lotus factory. It was a factory car, a Lotus Cortina being a sedan. Mm-hmm. And we were sent out to do the 500. I'm not sure if it's the Pabst 500 or what 500 it was, but it
would have been like an under 2 liter then?
It was
class?
Under two, yeah, exactly. 1999, that car. So, but unfortunately, the lady in Lotus in England, I guess she looked at a map of America. And she put us in a Holiday Inn in Madison. Well, in those days, there was no I-43.
Right.
And we kept trying different routes cross country from here to Madison. The other thing that none of us Limeys were used to, of course, was all this County A stuff. County A, County B.
Right.
County BB.
I'm a city person. I'm still not even used to it.
And the fact is, of course, between here and Madison, there are about three counties. Mm-hmm. And they've all got a County A. So the locals would say, well, you go down here to get to County A, then you go down there, go north on County A until you get to County CC and go east. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, unfortunately, of course, as soon as you're out of that county, it's not County A anymore. It's
right.
Something else. So we had a lot of fun going back and forth to the track. I honestly can't remember how we did in the race.
Who was your co-driver?
I think I was driving with a guy called Chris Craft, who was another English driver of my era. And Chris did a lot of saloon car driving in England, sedan car driving, that is. And I can't remember how we did, and I can't remember who even won the race. It was probably a chaperone. I mean, we were probably being lapped about every five laps.
We have to ask Tom Schultz for that, the resident historian of Road America, good guy. And then, Formula 5000, that's always an interesting story, too, in 1969, because you were running Formula 5000 in England. And then you came over towards the end of the summer to race Formula 5000, and you and I think with John Cannon were racing right to the end for the championship.
Well, it was.
Or is it Tony Adamowicz?
Tony Adamowicz. What happened was that John Surtees, who had decided to make his own car, so he made the first car was a Surtees TS5, which was designed by a chap called Len Terry, who was an English car designer at the time, and he had designed the Gurney Eagle. Which, in fact, if you go and look at the eagle on display it in the museum, at the Collier Museum in Naples, Florida, the front suspension on the eagle and the front suspension on the Surtees were absolutely identical. But I did a couple of races in England, and we had our first win in a place called Mondello Park in Ireland, and that was in June. And then he'd been trying to set up a deal with James Garner, who had got all hot to trot on racing. James had a big sponsor out of Riverside, California, not far from where your last guest came from, who was a big, he made motorhomes. Not so much motorhomes as mobile homes. And anyway, it fell through, like pretty well everything that poor old John Surtees did. So in the end, he decided to bite the bullet and sent me out on my own with a chap called Dennis Davis, who was a mechanic for a long time with McLaren and other people. Done a lot of Formula One work, and he and I came out, and we're like this dynamic duo driving all around North America. And we came here, and we stayed at Sharp Summer Resort, which is really where those condos on the lake are now.
Right.
And, God, I mean, I remember the bugs being just grotesque. Had the car up on stands in the driveway at the motel, working on it, trying to change the engine or something. And anyway, it was 3 100-mile heats. And I was pretty close to the front in qualifying. And going down into the kink on lap one, heat one, I was alongside the local hero, Jerry Grant, who, of course, I knew nothing about Jerry Grant. Anyway, I went to the kink, and I suddenly realized there was nobody behind me. And there'd been a massive shunt down there. Cars going off in all directions. Now, I'm sounding a bit like the granny now, who says, I've never had an accident, but I've seen lots in my mirror. And so I'm wondering if there was something that involved. Anyway, just as I pulled up to the start-finish line, there was a red flag, so the whole thing was called off, and it went on to 7. So I did really one lap of the 300 miles, which was my really first venture here. And then, of course, I hadn't been here since 64. And after 1969, I basically ended up racing at Road America at least once, if not twice a year, for until 86.
With, was it with IMSA?
With Formula 5000, with IMSA, Trans Am, Can Am. You know, I had to go at everything here. And as I say, I usually ended up having at least, well, every year I had at least one race here. And some years I'd come here two or maybe three times. And in the end, I had some good success. I won the 500 twice.
The one time in 79, you weren't even expecting to win it with BMW.
We weren't expecting to finish with the big key, you know, because that car, that little BMW 320 Ti Turbo, was gave a lot of horsepower for the day. You know, 2 litres, it was giving 700 horsepower. Massive throttle lag with the turbocharger. And it was not the most reliable vehicle I've ever driven. So Roger Bailey was the team manager, and me and Tyler Alexander, because the car was run by McLaren North America out of Detroit. We were all saying, well, is it even worth going? You know, gosh, we can't even do a 100-mile race without the thing breaking. Anyway, I had Derek Bell as my co-driver, and Derek Bell, of course, was an incredibly lucky race driver. I mean, he won the Le Mans 5 times. And he comes along, and we won it. Couldn't believe it. It was amazing.
How did one fight turbo leg back in those days? Was it a timing deal?
Yeah, you go in the corner and you just had to get it right, because obviously turbo lag wasn't always exactly the same.
Right.
Depending on the rev and what gear you were in.
Sure.
It made a bit of a difference to how long the lag lasted. So you had to get used to it and work it out when it was going to come on boost. And you obviously wanted to come on boost right about at the apex. You didn't want it to come on boost just before the apex. I mean, I'd driven at Indy by then, and of course there was easy. You just brake with your left foot and kept the throttle open a bit,
right?
So it kept the turbo spinning, but not much boost. And then of course you just lift off the brake and off it go again. But road racing was a bit difficult, and of course it's only a little engine. It's only 2 liters, one great big turbo, and 4 cylinders. So when the 935 came along with a 6-cylinder engine and 2 turbos. Their lag was significantly less. Plus, of course, they had a lot more horsepower when the thing wasn't in a lag mode, because it was like a 3.5-litre engine, so it had much more grunt anyway.
And then, of course, the 962s in the 80s, of course, with John Fitzpatrick and that. That was how big was IMSA back then? If the fans who may not be, or listeners, are not old enough to remember those days.
Well, IMSA was very big, and I'm glad to see it getting really big again. It seems to have made a massive resurgence in the last couple of years. And, you know, the race coming up here in August is going to be, I think it'll be a really, really good race. Now, they are screwing around with their classes again, which sanctioning bodies tend to do. And I'm not sure that that's going to be the best thing in the world for IMSA. It's so hard to tell, because you get these guys making the rules and regulations, and they think they're doing it for the best of the sport, and sometimes they don't. And, of course, A prime example to my mind was Formula 5000, which I ran for a long time, from 1969 until 1974. And, I mean, that was one of the best classes that we had here, road racing. And all the promoters and the SCCA all said, nobody wants to watch single-seaters on racetracks. They want to watch cars with bodywork, Can-Am, Trans-Am. So they took the Can-Am cars and the Formula 5000 cars and turned them into Can-Am cars, which was when the first big Can-Am had gone away.
Right.
But, of course, it never made it. And right after that, Champ car racing came along, which, of course, was the USAC, and it turned into Champ car, which was the Indy car that we know today, but run under Champ car rules. And suddenly, I mean, everywhere had these massive crowds, places like Mid-Ohio, Road Atlanta, Road America, had the biggest, some of the biggest crowds they've ever had. And what were they watching? They were watching single-seater racing cars on road racetracks.
Exactly. You
know, which is where the guys had got it all wrong. And I feel that the IndyCar of today probably should really be a Formula 5000 car that's evolved.
And for those that are not familiar with it, a Formula 5000 car is basically almost like a Formula 1 car, but with a stock blocket motor, a 5-liter, naturally aspirated, and, I mean, for the price.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think of it, Surtees sent you over here with one mechanic, and how much support did you get with it? I mean, if you needed an engine, was that something he would set up, or how did that work out?
Well, we had the engines were done by Al Bart out in California.
Okay.
And so we used to just we only had about two or three engines, I think, in the chain.
It was just you and your mechanic.
Yeah.
Two people.
And we were based just outside Toronto in Canada, so we went everywhere from Toronto. So because every time you cross the border,
Mossport wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
But
oh my God.
Were you hitting Edmonton then too?
Went to Edmonton, and but I mean, most of the races were in the U.S.
Laguna Seca—that's quite a haul.
It's a haul from Toronto. And of course, any time any engines came back into Canada from California, you had to go through customs, and you had to have paperwork, reams of paperwork, to get the damn thing in and out. And, are you sure you're not going to sell it? Are you going to sell this? No, this is our engine. We're going to use it. So. It was a bit inconvenient, but we were at a little shell garage there that John Surtees had met when he first started doing Can-Am. Well, actually started doing the USRRC, which was before Can-Am, which is 1965. And he had met this guy called Ronnie Mutton, who owned a shell station in Bowmanville, Ontario, which is a little rinky-dink town then. Now, of course, it's huge.
Right.
It's practically all part of Toronto. But so we were based there for 2 years, and... So we started here at Road America, and of course it was actually race 7 of the series. And as I said, I did one lap. But then we got into our stride, and I was significantly quicker than most of the other people in the series. And the I ended up having 3 wins, and I lost the championship by 1 point to Tony Adamowicz, who won it by 1 point. And I think he might have won here, but he only had 1 win in the year. Nobody else in the series had more than 1 win, and I had 3 and I only did half the series, and I lost the championship by 1 point. Then we came back the following year, 1970, and again we started halfway through the year, and I could only come 3rd that year, having done half the races. Then the year after, I changed teams, drove for Carl Hogan out of St. Louis, and in a McLaren M10A, and we won 5 races and won the championship.
Very good. And what was your last race here?
My last, what I 89? Call my last real race, was probably 86.
With BMW prototype.
I might have come back in 87 with my son Greg. We drove a 320 here.
Okay.
Owned by a guy called Leo, out of Chicago, and a nice chap. And he was a big fan of the Hobbs family, and he wanted Greg to do well. And we raced his 3. I think Greg and I raced his 320 here. He might have driven it as well. But my last real race was the BMW prototype in 86. And that car was dynamite. Now, that was the same engine I raced in the BMW 320 in 1977. But since then, BMW have done a tremendous amount of engine development. And in 1984, they won the world championship in Formula One cars with a BMW engine in a Brabham. Nelson Piquet was the world champion, and they won the championship with the Brabham and a BMW engine. So when we took it on again in 1986, it had improved enormously from 1977. And it gave it in qualifying trim, it gave 1,000 horsepower.
Amazing. From such a small engine, too.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they had stroked it to make it a full 2 litre instead of like 1950.
Right.
Which unfortunately caused a lot of vibration. So we had early season issues with vibration breaking pipes, like gas pipes, which caused the fire. But it was one of my most disappointing races ever here, because we were on the front row, and the hero of those days, the leader, was Al Hulbert and Derek Bell in the
Lone Brown
962. And I remember coming up this main straight right outside this window here, and I was right behind Derek driving the Lone Brown car, and he was second, and I was about to lap him. Which would have been very, very, very good for me. And going down into turn five, it suddenly, the engine just stumbled and bumbled and just, and it choked itself. And it stopped down at turn five, and I fiddled around with it because I couldn't do anything. I managed to stagger back to the pits through the infield. Anyway, some wire had broken in the electronic control unit and had put it onto full rich.
Ah.
So in the morning, when it was cool, on the Monday morning, mm-hmm. it just fired right up, because it was like pulling the choke out.
Right.
It's like pulling the choke out and hanging your handbag on it, you know. they don't work too good when they're no. that. And it just went over rich and stopped. So that was very disappointing.
And then your last race, of course, was WEC 1990, but you have never officially announced your retirement. Is that true?
This is true. There is time left. Well,
it is, you know, being at some of these book signings and that, and being spending some time with you, you still get offers to drive many vintage cars, and I think your explanation on why you don't makes a lot of sense. And why don't you tell the listeners, why don't you drive vintage cars?
Well, I was extremely fortunate in my racing career that I raced for 30 years, from 1959 to 1989. And I was on the TV from 1976 to 2018. But in all my races, I never got hurt. And I raced through probably the most dangerous era ever of racing, because cars, and particularly tyres, developed at an astonishing rate, and speeds absolutely rocketed. But of course, track safety didn't change for the first 10 years at all, and nor did car safety much. Nobody thought about the safety side of it. They just thought about making it light and fast. Mm-hmm. So it became very dangerous, and somehow in all that time I never so much as even broke a finger. Now Brian Ribbon, one of my best friends, says, well, in that case, lad, you obviously weren't going fast enough. Well, I went fast enough to win a couple of championships and quite a few races. So I just look at it now and I say, why would I stick my neck out
right. And
drive a car that's 30 years old that wasn't very safe 30 years ago, and it sure as hell is not any safer now than it was then. And I brake a lot easier. And if anything does break, it takes forever to fix.
I remember the first time I saw a Porsche 917 in person. And, of course, as a kid, you know, you're a big fan of the movie Le Mans with Steve McQueen and everything. And you see the 917s, and in fact, you drove one. And, you know, you look at those cars, okay, and they look, you know, kind of big. And then when you see one in person, I was shocked at how small it was. And then I remember getting up close to one, looking at it, and going, where's the firewall? There is no
firewall.
There's no firewall. It's just fiberglass between you and that air-cooled engine.
A thin piece of fiberglass.
Yes.
No, and of course, the 917 was a space frame car. If you take the bodywork off, you look at it and you think, how the hell is
that? Not much there.
There's not much there. And at one stage, Porsche even put pressure gauges on the tubes. They pumped them full of nitrogen. And if you saw the pressure gauge was above your head, and if the pressure dropped, you knew the chassis had cracked somewhere. They were a bit of a flexible flyer. I mean, they were fast as hell. But, I mean, to say they were safe would be definitely a misnomer.
Brian Redman has a great story about testing that car.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We won't go into that.
No, we won't get into that now.
That's in case Porsche are listening.
But, yeah, it is amazing. And you know, it's ironic that here we go. Here we are in 2019, and we have the Red Group, who is so integral in emergency safety and everything, sponsoring the event this weekend, the NTT IndyCar Series at Road America. And, you know, I took a very roundabout way somehow ending up in radio, but my first job in racing was track safety. And so I've always had kind of an interest in it, and I just remember looking at that 917 going, where's the rest of the car?
Well, the cars, and of course the tracks were a joke. I mean, I first went to Spa, Belgium in 1966 in a GT40.
Barbed wire is insane.
And of course, exactly. I'm in a GT40, which has got bodywork around it. But as you went out on that long master straight, it was a downhill straight, about 2 miles long, and it had a bit of a kink through the village, so there's houses and sidewalks and lampposts right at the side of the road, not a trace of guardrail. And of course, people sitting in their lawn chairs right at the apex of the corner, so they'd get nice and close to the racing cars. And the clipping point as you exited the village was a utility pole made of concrete against which they lent a straw bale. And of course, I think it was last weekend was the anniversary of the Belgian Grand Prix, which had been 1962. So that is, nearly 50 years ago. And two drivers were killed that year. Chris Bristow went off the road and was decapitated by the barbed wire fence. And Alan Bristow was driving a Lotus, and he got hit in the head by a bird.
That was a bad week.
Tracks were not safe. And Stirling Moss, actually, in practice for that same event, had gone off on the bank at Bourneville Turn and had broken both legs.
And Willie Maurice was involved with
Willie
the Bristow.
Maurice, he could have been. Willie Maurice was involved in a lot of crashes over his career. But he
was thrown from the car to safety, which was...
Well, of course, when seatbelts came in Europe, a lot of drivers were very sceptical about it because they thought, no, it's much safer to be thrown from the car. But, of course, from those days, maybe with the fire and the way the car just crushed around you, maybe... Nowadays, I mean, the way these cars bounce off these walls at Indian places like that, it's just absolutely staggering that anybody survives it.
I sent you a photo, and I forget the gentleman's name, who's become my hero, the Irishman. In fact, you were talking about the place in the Formula 5000. He was the heavyset guy who actually survived a couple of races. He got killed. He was the big guy that was driving that old Lotus, the heavyset guy.
Oh, Chris Summers.
Chris Summers, yes.
Yeah,
fascinating. And here's a guy who had several accidents, never, and you see him. He's sitting in this Lotus, and it's cut away, and you can see clear as day. No seatbelts.
Oh no, and of course Chris Summers was a heavy set guy,
big guy. Yes.
And I mean, he bulged out over the top of the bowl. So nowadays you can only just see the top of the driver's head because of all that safety stuff around you.
You can see him mid-torso up.
His elbows are out over the side of the chassis, and he's grappling with the wheel. And, I mean, you're half out the car already. Imagine when the thing turned over. I mean, your head's the rollover point.
Exactly. Well, David, we certainly appreciate you coming out and enjoying the fantastic weather finally in Wisconsin at the Rev Group NTT IndyCar Series up here in Road America. Make sure you come out. There's still time to come out for Saturday today, and then also tomorrow is the big race. So come on out. It's a fun event, great action, and who knows, you might even see David Hobbs
walking
around.
Well, if you're very lucky, you might see me walking around.
Yeah. Look for the mob of people chasing you.
Just look for the mob, and then I'll be in the middle of that.
David, appreciate it. You've been listening to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove and David Hobbs Honda. Where is David Hobbs Honda again?
6100 North Green Bay Avenue, Glendale.
Very good,
sir. Where every car has a sale deal.
Thank you, David.
Milwaukee, start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, here's your host, Steve Zocchi.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show. We're at Road America, and appreciate Dave Coleman joining us in Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's the Rev Group Grand Prix NTT IndyCar Series weekend. And this is a fun event, Dave, and it seems like the IndyCar Series is finally starting to get things right.
This is a national holiday, isn't it?
It is.
It should be.
It
should,
yes.
It'll be a four-day weekend. We can push it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it has done a really nice job since coming back. A lot of interest in getting it back, and I think it's maintained that interest. That's the key, you know. Whereas, I hate to say it, but the NASCAR race took off like crazy, and then you know it's been a little bit of a decline. This is fourth year now back and maintaining. So that's cool. Good crowd, a lot of interest, a lot of buzz. Actually, some. You know, the rare, nice day, warm, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, and it's finally summertime.
Yes.
Finally. So
for how long? But.
That remains to be seen, but we should be good this weekend. I was on a Bill Michaels show yesterday, and he asked me, what's IndyCar doing different, or why are things seem to be looking up? And I said, well, one of the things is the people they have in charge, like Jay Fry and that, but they actually have a five-year plan. Is that something you agree with?
That's a good point. I'm glad that you were on with Bill and had to answer that question.
Well, in the past, I mean, we saw with Tony George's group and that, okay, this is what we're going to do this year. We're going to bring Gene Simmons this year, and then it's something else next year. It was always something new. Now they kind of say, okay, this is what we want to accomplish in the next 5 years. I mentioned, you know, the TV program, getting everything, centralize everything to one network and that kind of stuff. And it seems like everything, you know, I mean, and especially in this environment, getting a title sponsor is not easy. We've seen the struggles that NASCAR has and what price point they had to go down to. And then they, you know, IndyCar, you know, it was nice synergy with Verizon, but they were changing their marketing. They're still involved with the series, but not as a title sponsor. And then they were able to get NTT. But without taking it from a team, because that was one of the deals. So, I mean, you don't want to, you know, take a title sponsor away from a team. So, I mean, it kind of worked out, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great point. You had to bring up Gene Simmons, I know. But other than that, it's a great point. Now, there is a plan, and there is in the TV thing with going to the. I don't even know how to describe it, but the streaming, I mean, there's not,
right.
You have the live broadcast of the main deal, but if you want to watch every practice, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's through an app. So that's,
there's a lot of people not happy with it, but I hate to say it. That is the future.
As, as a guy who works in newspapers, I can tell you a few things about how people consume their media these days, and that's a forward-looking approach to things. It's not, well, we've been on TV, so we need to be on more TV, or we can't afford to be on TV, so we need to be on less TV and try. You know, it's not that. It's, hey, here's this whole different concept. Let's do it.
Right. So you can get as much as you want. You will give everything, all the content, if you want to just pay a little bit, and you know, it's. People just aren't, but the future is, if you really, and we're seeing everything's not divisive, but everything is so specialized
fragmented,
is that if you're a hardcore IndyCar guy, you should have this package.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's no question about it. And I'm sort of the opposite way around. If I pay for it, then maybe I'll be more inclined to, you know, to dig into it deeper.
So
that's it breeds that loyalty.
Confession time.
No,
I will admit. Did you ask if there was a media pass? Because I did. Apparently I wasn't. Yeah. Yes, because media people are especially known to be cheap. And I thought, just ask.
Can't hurt to ask. Yeah.
No, there is not. Okay, fine. And then I went ahead and bought it. I got the sale price, though.
Okay, good.
So, I you know what? I used it a lot during May.
Sure.
In India was fantastic because I think one thing that for the real hardcore indie fans missed was when it was on ESPN and you'd have Bob Jenkins and Derek Daly, or you know, when you'd come home from work, you could see what happened in Indy today. Mm-hmm. And with this package, you could do that. And to be honest, you know, with a smart TV, I press one button, I can get it, and it's a great picture. It looks good. I mean, they broadcast it. It's fantastic, the quality of the imaging.
Yeah, that's nice to hear that you can do it in one button, because it's your TV is smart and your user is a lot smarter than mine. But that's the way things are going. That's the way. And yeah, it's not once you get used to it. Yes, it's different from what you've done since 1960, whatever.
Right.
But learn it, do it. It's not that hard.
Do I even want to bring this up?
Uh-oh.
And I know it. Okay, Road America and the Milwaukee Mile. People always ask me. I want your opinion. Why does it work here and not at the Milwaukee Mile?
It's a whole different experience. The experience that existed, that people craved in, the 70s, there were 19 races and everyone was 60,000 people. Well, A, your memory's not that good. And
right.
B, that's what people did then.
Right.
The consumer has changed. The fan experience has changed, and I'm not talking about racing. Well, I am talking about racing, but I'm talking across the board in sports. Whereas people were happy to go sit in a grandstand for a couple of hours and you know, elbow to elbow and watch the cars go by 10 or 15 or 20 seconds apart, that doesn't fly anymore for myriad reasons. If the option is to come out and have a picnic in the park and move from here to there and be able to see the cars elsewhere on the big screen and see them up close in, well, the carousel and also in turn one. And, you know, that this provides that option. And, you know, let's be honest, you can bring in your cooler and your little ones are free, you know. Yeah, it's a little, you know, it's a little expensive, but you can save on those
right.
things. And so it's just a different experience. And yeah, that's what there. A lot has changed since 1973.
I'm bringing my cousin later today, and her husband, and I'm really kind of looking forward to it because she's like, "Well, how does this kind of work?" And I'm really kind of looking forward to showing her all the different areas you can go, whether it's the paddock. Everything that's going on within the paddock, but turn five, top of turn, you know, turn six, where the slow corners, where you can get you're really close to the cars, to turn eight, you know, and then show them where my friends are camping out in turn eight, you know,
yeah,
and what kind
of
setup they might not leave,
right.
But, you know, and all the different areas, and especially that new cart path that runs along the backside is fantastic, you know.
It is amazing. I have been, this is my 30th season full time, and I helped out a few times in the mid 80s. So I've been here a lot. We can agree on that. There are places that I have never been that I make it a goal. You know, I make it a goal to go somewhere new, hopefully each event. And I'm amazed at the places I knew they existed, but
right.
until you see them close up, and that cart path, that path has just opened up a whole new world back there.
And we'll be talking in the next segment. We're talking about I want to talk about racing photography and how it's changed. But this is something your name came up. I was talking to somebody. I said, "Have you seen Dave Coleman's photography?" I said, "It's really good." So I mean, from your point of view, I mean, this track is probably it's a photographer's dream.
Except that there are porta potties everywhere you'd want.
Yeah, right. For the corner workers, man.
It is fabulous. You know, there's all kinds of, you can shoot through the trees, you can shoot around the trees, you can shoot wide open. You know,
you can get the card every angle.
Yeah,
any angle you want, you can get the card.
There's decent access in the paddock, and it is it just offers so much. It is. I mean, people talk about this track why drivers love it. It's because it presents all these different challenges. Different, you know, high-speed corners, slow-speed corners, long straights. It's the same thing for photographers. It gives you that many options of ways to attack it. And that's cool. You don't have to, let's be honest. Like, okay, I did at the mile on for the Midwest Tour race. Mm-hmm. You know, I was down in turn four, shooting the same shot over and over right. and over. And, you know, you can do that here, or you can also do that for a little while and go somewhere else and do that for a little while and go somewhere else, and then pretty soon you'll be out of race, and next year you'll go somewhere else.
Right. Well, Dave, we certainly appreciate you taking out time. You're a busy schedule. And what's coming up in the Journal Sentinel?
Oh, my goodness. That's a great question.
What feature are you actually working on? Because usually you bring up a person or something.
Right.
What's your feature person?
I have a great look at here I am bragging. I don't know that it'll be a great look. It's what I enjoy as a look at Joseph Newgarden. And, you know, okay, you know him as the 2017 champ and the defending winner of this race, who had just put together a flawless race in 2018. And you know him as this polished guy who drives for Penske and whatnot.
He's actually somebody that punked us on national TV, you and I.
Yes.
Dave and I are in Indianapolis doing interviews, and we're interviewing, I think, Graham Rahal. I think it might have been. And Joseph Newgarden had this shtick where he's an obnoxious sports reporter, kind of dressed as an old man. I did not recognize him. You didn't recognize him. He totally punked us.
Right.
We knew something was going on. We just didn't know exactly what.
Well, yeah, he was, you know, asking. It was Elio for me. Maybe you were.
Maybe it was Elio. Okay,
You know, yeah, asking him about whatever urinary tract health or some such thing. We knew we were a part of something special.
And then there we are on national TV.
Yeah, looking
confused.
But the angle we took on this is, you know, we know that guy. That's the Newgarden. We know the guy who has the little faces on a stick in Newgarden here at Road America. But it hasn't been that long ago since, you know, he was a 21-year-old kid fighting his way onto the grid, worried after every session that he was going to get fired. Mm-hmm. You know, so I took him back to those days through the prism of these 8 years, what it's sort of, you looking back on that, what that was like, and just how nervous he was then, and how, you know, on one hand, he was sure he was going to get fired every time he got out of the car, but he also came in knowing that he was going to be the best of all time. Because if you don't believe that,
right.
then why are you here?
So every driver believes that.
Yeah, it's just an interesting, internal fight.
I always get kick out when people go, oh, that driver's so cocky. They're all cocky. If they're not cocky, they're not good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, every driver thinks he is the all-time best.
Yeah, at some point, you know, those things moderate. Those are the incredible extremes. I'm going to get fired, and I'm going to rewrite the record book. Now, it's probably going to be somewhere in between.
Right.
So, and obviously he's, you know, been on the upper end of somewhere in between here in the last
talented driver. Good for the sport. Dave Coleman, always appreciate it. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule.
My
pleasure.
Being
on the Final Inspection Show.
Absolutely.
You're listening to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove and David Hobbs Honda on The Fan. Show brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove, along with David Hobbs Honda, and we're going to try something a little bit different here. Eddie Lapine, who's been on the show many times, RacingNation.com, Rich Zimmerman, world-famous photographer, and I just noticed all of us early on were photographers.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of a cool thing. I thought, kind of idea, let's talk about track photography, because we were just talking with Dave Coleman of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And this is one of the great tracks to shoot at, and we've all shot here. But what are some of your, what's your favorite memory, Rich, shooting here?
Ooh, 1987, the Löwenbräu car, Derek Bell. And Al Holbert, I can still smell the bratwurst like every time I get here. It's just, and I look at a picture of that car now. I have a model at home, and it just brings back Elkhart.
It's ironic. That race, I don't think I shot, but you shot that race too, didn't you? You were.
I think me and Zim were elbow to elbow.
Probably.
We have the same pictures.
It was a rainy weekend. I remember that, but it was, that car is just legendary, and it'll forever stick in my memory.
There's also funny stories I remember. When you're a racing photographer, there's photo meetings you have to go to. There's rules you have to adhere because you're in a, quote, dangerous zone. But nowadays, it's not even close to what you used to be able to get away even 10, 15 years ago. And so insurance regulations and whatnot, there's a lot more fencing, which is mostly for the fans of that, because, I mean, as cars go faster, the velocity of things, you don't want parts going into the crowd. So insurance regulations have put up what they call FIA fencing along areas, which never had fencing here, but also at the Milwaukee Mile. The Milwaukee Mile, you could pretty much shoot anywhere on the inside of the track. And I remember it was the 2000 race. It was rained out. And they ran it on a Monday. That's the one Montoya won. So it was a kart race. Montoya won the Indy 500 the week before, and then the following week it was the kart race. So it was a Monday race, and I remember starting a race. I'm hanging with Roy Schmidt, who's shot for many years for Checkered Flag Racing, who, as Eddie remembers him. And he kind of pokes me on the shoulder, and he goes, nods his head over to our left. And I look down, and there's two photographers from Brazil on the track. Laying down to shoot the start. Oh. And the officials, the observers, who are about 30 feet away up in an elevated observer stand, are going ape. They are just yelling and screaming. So finally we got their attention and said, you got to come on this side of the wall, and you cannot lay on the track.
Wow. Good shot, I'm sure.
And, we've seen, you go on Facebook and other places, we've seen shots like that at Formula One races, especially in Europe. I think there's a famous shot of some photographers coming out of one of the hairpins. Guys are laying on the track getting right. their shot.
Yeah,
with Fangio.
Right.
I remember those great pictures. I think what stands out, like when I was first started shooting in 81, I got the privilege, I think, now I look back at it, in 82 was going to Detroit and shooting when the rules weren't very strong. That's when they started in that era.
And you could get so close, too.
I was using a wide-angle lens, and literally, I've posted some pictures on the final inspection of Niki Lauda, I think, a few months ago, a month ago or so, and you could literally slap them across the helmet.
Yeah.
And you'd have this wedge of photographers elbow to elbow shooting this shot with a wide angle lens. And literally they would touch the guardrail with the car coming through the corner and everyone would jump back. And it was just, I think they should have had video footage of that because it was really, it was amazing to see those cars with 1,000 horsepower on a street circuit.
You won't do that anymore. They won't, number one, allow you in Formula One.
Right.
Unless you're in their clique of people to do it. And it's so restricted. It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And now when you see pictures, I know I posted the picture of Niki Lauda sitting on the rear tire of Alan Prost's car. Now you're lucky if you see the drivers, anywhere picture of them.
That's why I like IndyCar. You see these guys. You don't in Formula One. IndyCar, you can see them, you can photograph them, you can talk to them.
Exactly.
The one podcast that we endorse on this show is Dinner with Racers, and the one with Derek Bell is fascinating because he did a lot of the film work on Le Mans, the movie Le Mans with Steve McQueen, and they run Le Mans, the 24 Hours of Le Mans in June. And then he did the principal shooting, I think it was, from August or just after the race until, I think, September or something. And so there was, they would do a lot of running and whatnot. And one day, Derek Bell is running on the course, and he goes over the crown, and he looks, and there's a guy laying in the road.
Ooh.
And he goes past him, he goes into pits. He goes, there's a guy laying in the road. Oh, yeah, that's our cameraman. You know who it was? Steve McQueen.
Oh, man.
He goes, you could have told me. I didn't know he was there. I could not, you know, and he's thinking, like, I'm sure the executive producers and all the powers to be would have gone nuts if they knew the star of the
show is laying on a racetrack
with cars zipping past him at 180 miles an hour.
Well, that inches my favorite from movie, Grand Prix. You look at some of the footage of that and the cars, how they're going and flying. It's
John Frankenheimer
a little while ago, and
right,
he's talking about safety in those days. And
John Frankenheimer, and so the cinematography he used. It's funny. My dad was a movie photographer at the Milwaukee Mile for many years, and he told me that a lot of the shots from that point. It's funny when you look at his footage, the low angled shots. He goes, right. "Oh, I got that from the movie Grand Prix."
Right.
You know, they were pushing the cars onto the track. He'd get the cars, yep, you know, getting pushed by, and he goes, "Oh, yeah, that was because of the movie Grand Prix."
It's probably why I kneel in pit lane and lay down half the time for a shot.
I mean, it's the low angle. It's fantastic.
Well,
it's
a view you now don't see with the movies, like the Ford versus Ferrari movie that's going to be coming out with Matt Damon and Christian Bale. They filmed some of that. They made an old Le Mans track at Road Atlanta, and that's where they filmed a lot of that segment there.
Yeah, hopefully it's as good as our previous two movies we're talking about, Grand Prix and
Le Mans.
I mean, let's hope it rejuvenates the vintage and racing world.
So they've tried a lot of good racing movies since then, and not done so well.
No, we won't talk about that one.
Which one are you talking about?
The one
Sylvester
that they call
Stallone,
the one
Driven?
They call Drivel. Yeah, they call it Drivel.
Drivel. Yes.
Hey, I was watching him make that movie. I was at the Champ Car race.
So we are. You're listening to the Final Inspection Show as we're broadcasting from Road America, as the Red Group Grand Prix of Road America, of course, the tribute to first responders. So make sure you get out to Road America. Still time left today, Saturday, but make sure you get out to the race tomorrow. Sunday should be a fantastic race as the NTT IndyCar Series Rev Group Grand Prix. It's an early start. You get here early in the morning. But they have like five series out here, so full day of racing, and should be a lot of fun. And just like we were talking with Dave Coleman and that previously about just so many things to do up here. Don't think of, you're not going to go here and just go to one place. You're going to just take it all in. Just think of yourself as a big, what is it, like a prime rib sandwich with the au jus. You just want to soak it all up because there's so many things to do out here. You got the paddock area. And what's cool, there's a public victory lane here, too, that they opened up a couple of years ago. That's a really cool thing where the cars come in. You can watch your, if your favorite driver is going to win, get down to victory lane. You can see them, the victory lane celebration and that, where
you can,
of course,
take his picture.
Rich,
anyway.
Yeah, anybody. Not only can Rich Zimmerman take his photo, but anybody can. So.
Anybody with an iPhone.
Yes. Yeah. So,
and it's people with iPhones.
Well, I certainly appreciate you guys coming on the show, Eddie Lapine. Make sure to check out racingnation.com. And Rich Zimmerman, how does one check out your footage?
RichZimmerman.com, two M's, two N's.
And I should probably gave you a little bit of a background. How long have you been shooting?
Let's see. First racing photo was off the TV in 1971, and I forced my dad to take me and 71 then to the Milwaukee Mile, which he hated, and shooting since then.
You should have asked John Drilling to take
that. Right, or Earl Gillespie.
Yes.
And rock and roll about the same time, 71, and just
and that's shooting then. That's the really cool stuff. Rich has an archive of musical photography that is fantastic, and one of these days you're gonna have to do that book. We've been kicking around maybe doing a podcast about music and that. So who knows? But there's a
– retirement's coming soon.
As a lover of music, too, I mean, there's just so much there, Rich. Yeah. So and you know, like I said, anybody can shoot photos, but Rich is a photographer. He's very talented. And
Thank you, sir.
I really appreciate it. You coming on the show and –
thanks.
Looking forward to the Rev Group Grand Prix at Road America. Make sure you come out and support this fantastic event. Just one of the many events happening at Road America this year. Don't forget, we got in a couple of weeks, we got the Vintage Weekend, and then also IMSA Weekend. We'll be back broadcasting live out here in August. So check out roadamerica.com for details, and we'll see you at the races. You've been listening to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Make sure you check out the Final Inspection July 6th, live from Great Lakes Dragway. Myself and the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski, will be broadcasting live July 6th at Great Lakes Dragway. And David Hobbs Honda, make sure you check out davidhobbs.com for all the latest and greatest deals in new and used vehicles at davidhobbs.com. Thank you for listening to the Final Inspection Show.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
This hasn't been a place where you've been fastest of the day very often. But
I think that's very untrue, actually. I think we were quickest in qualifying last year, except for the fast six. But
okay, let's talk about your how you feel about this race coming into this weekend.
Good. I mean, as I kind of alluded to, I think we've been strong here pace-wise. The end result has never really been great on Sundays for one issue or another, but I think in general the team's been pretty strong here. So, you know, we came here obviously looking to make this one of our tracks that we've had good results at, hopefully after this weekend. So I think the team's doing a good job. I think all cars are working in a positive direction, and we'll just have to stay on top of the track as it evolves, which is always pretty key on these weekends with, you know, ever-changing track conditions.
Is there a portion of the racetrack you like particularly?
All of it, really. I mean, it's a great track. It's always a privilege to come here, and it's nice to be able to stretch our legs a bit in terms of the lap distance. And the only other track we have that's kind of similar is COTA, which we obviously went to for the first time this year, and it was a great race for us. So, I think all the drivers are of the same kind of opinion that we love driving here. The fan turnout is always amazing. The autograph session today was fantastic, so it's a real privilege.
Questions? Matt?
For the lap where you posted the fastest time, that looked like it was pretty much on the ragged edge. Is that required in qualifying to make a pole run? And what is the qualifying run like compared to once you get into race mode? How does it change?
That lap wasn't good for us. I mean, I think we gave up a lot of time in turn six and turn 13, so we should be a bit better than what we were. It's always interesting. You know, we come to these tracks where, you know, not a lot theoretically has changed, but the car that you had pretty good performance and balance with the previous year doesn't necessarily translate the same the next year. So it's something we all have to stay on top of and continue chasing, and not too happy with the car right now. I mean, I'm pleased that obviously there's pace in it, but it's a handful to drive. Hopefully we can make that a bit better for tomorrow. And your second part of your question, the race running is pretty substantially different. I mean, the tires, it seems the alternate tires definitely do have a fall off. So we're all trying to understand what that is and what that will look like come race day on Sunday.
We have a wireless mic now. Wolfgang?
I have two again. Alex, what's the track condition?
Yeah.
Is there any key part of the track where you personally have an advantage over your competitors?
I haven't been able to look at that part yet. In terms of the segments, our difference to the competition. I always am pretty comfortable in high speed corners, so there's a lot of those at this track. So I'm sure we're pretty strong there. But the track's in great shape. Obviously we all saw what they did in the kink with the addition of the safer barrier, which is a super positive thing, and we're all very thankful for the track to go ahead and do that. And as I told Kurt at the beginning, I mean, we all love coming here, and it's an amazing racetrack to get to drive on.
When you're out there and you've got a great lap going, I mean, is this place just a blast to drive?
Yeah, but it's a big lap. So like, if things are going well, it's fun. If the car's not quite where you want it, it's a long time out there struggling. So it can go either way. But yeah, I mean, in general, driving an IndyCar around Road America is pretty awesome.
Any other questions for Alex before we let him go, Matt?
Your free agency. I know you're trying your best to kind of push that away and we'll focus on this season. Robin had a report on TV talking about how you're just trying to put that in the corner a little bit. So how are you treating the sort of narrative that's swirling around you? How do you compartmentalize that and focus on racing? Do you enjoy being the center of attention a little?
No. I think you guys know me by that point. But it's not my narrative. It's the media's narrative. So it's pretty easy to just go out and do my job and try and win races each weekend.
Does it become a distraction at all during the summer?
No. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Alex. Joined now by Team Penske driver Will Power. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Good strong run. You've had cars here that obviously have run well, qualified on the front row all 3 years. Last year, probably been waiting to get back after a bad start to that race. I assume you've been anxious or eager to get back here.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, last year it sucks having to watch the race from the outside. Didn't even get to really do a lap. So see if we can make the first lap and then think about the rest. But the car's really good. Really happy with it in a qualifying trim. So just a matter of tick, you know, massaging on it overnight, get it right in the window. I think we're there.
What do you like about racing here?
It's just a cool old school track. I mean, it's pretty low grip. The car moves around a lot, and like through the carousel, you're just sliding all the way through there. It's it's just a don't get these sort of tracks anymore. They're just track with a lot of character and old school. You make a mistake, you certainly pay for it. It's an enjoyable place.
After the long run down into turn 12, there's a lot of hand movement coming out of 12. Is that a pretty tricky spot?
It's the way the exit curves are. If you get over those exit curves, I mean, the whole track's like that. Got those bumpy exit curves, it really upsets the car. But yeah, you watch through the carousels, the same thing. I mean, you're just working the wheel all the way through. Yeah, this whole track, you're on the wheel.
Okay. Questions?
I think that last session, a pit stop practice for warm up, even though it's going to be down. You probably just treat like another bit of practice, but just your opinion on that session seems like weird.
It's actually a great idea rather than morning warm up because it's around about, it's in similar temperatures to when the race would be. So it's, to me, better than the Sunday morning warm up. It's good.
Are you making another one of your...
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.